Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Carl Carlson.
Hey, Carl. It's been a little while since we chatted, but we were chatting offline here for a second, and you caught it. You said, let's hit record. And we were both talking about, you know, various topics we've been thinking about and wondering about and stuff like that. And part of what I brought up was a question that I was on my list of stuff that to ask you about anyway, to talk about. But it was one that made me think. I had to step back and go, this was going to be a more complicated answer. But the gist of it, and I really apologize, I don't remember the person's name. I don't have it printed out. But it was, the gist of the question was, I've been a reliability engineer for 4 or 5 years and you know, kind of getting into the routine, but I'm struggling with the balance between being the trainer, teaching people and training and doing stuff, do it myself, you know, facilitating FMEA, doing the data analysis, doing the hands-on, getting it done type stuff, running tests, analyzing field data and stuff like that, and enabling other people. And I thought, I don't think there is a one answer to it. And that's kind of how I answered it to it. It was every situation is dynamic. But then you brought up a question from somebody or a concern about what's the individual human's role given all the AI stuff that's coming at us. And I thought, well, I'm wondering if these two relate and connect in some way to some higher purpose for what we do that can be a touchstone for what it is to be a reliability engineer.
It's a really, really good introduction. I almost have two overlapping topics. Let me just try a little feedback here. Mm-hmm. The doing work yourself is certainly an option on any type of work versus enabling others. We talk a lot about influencing others. There are certain mm-hmm. things you can do yourself. There are certain things that you really should be influencing others to do. Because we don't want a reliability engineer designing for reliability, taking over the job of the design engineer, for example.
Right.
And so there's that line of demarcation. There's also the line of demarcation of, do you like working alone, like somebody in a cubicle doing analysis, versus working with a team where you're really participating, and that gets into the enabling. And so there's also a career path along that line.
Well, I hadn't thought of all that stuff.
And then the other part of it is, I'll just introduce the second topic. And these might go into, like I say, they might go into two podcasts, but I'm writing an article at the end of this ebook. I'm basically publishing soon an ebook that summarizes my approach to FMEA that's summarizing all the articles that I've written on Ascendo, the book with John Wiley and Sons, mm-hmm. and putting it in a very simple form, simple to read and easy and that kind of thing. And at the end of that book, I'm writing an article called The Future of FMEA. And it's, the future of FMEA is going to involve artificial intelligence to some degree.
Yeah.
But to what degree? And where's the line that is the roles and responsibilities of the AI portion, and where's the role of the human in that mm-hmm. method of FMEA? And that is a line that is changing, and I'm trying to take it back to principles. What should be the human role that you don't want to give up because it'll undermine the performance and the result? And so that's like part two of the discussion. So let's focus on the first part where you had the question from a reader on doing things themselves versus enabling others. What are some of your thoughts on that, Fred?
Well, I hadn't thought about it as what's your preference, what's your preferred work style and career path and all those kinds of things. Is I look at it as, you know, the reliability engineer has, and I can't speak for all organizations and everybody that holds that title or it was works under that kind of title, is part advocate to create a product that or system that meets the reliability performance expectations by the customer or by your factory or wherever. It's we're kind of the guardian of that outcome. It is not guardian, I shouldn't say that. It's a champion for that outcome. And we come in with all kinds of various tools and techniques and methods that we use. We're the one that's, you know, this is, you know, vendor A, vendor B, and we're the one that doesn't say which is the lower cost. We say which one actually works well in our system over time. So it's, to me, it's in order to be good at what we do, to efficiently or effectively, and I think those have turned into buzzwords a long time ago, but it's in order to be good at what we do, it's we have to add value such that we achieve the reliability performance that's expected or help to achieve it. And that, like you said earlier, is we're not doing it ourselves leads to, as you and I both know, it leads to throw it over the wall. And there's nothing much we can do about improving a design that's already done and we can't change. You know, we can test it and say, well, it works or it doesn't work. But in those circumstances, we almost never get enough time or samples to make any meaningful statements. I think it's the influence part, keeping in mind that the reliability occurs at the point of decision, and that's in the project management team, the development team, the engineers across the organization, and so on, is that that enablement part allows us to influence people in a way that achieves the goal. Because we're, and I know you've seen it too, Carl, is where somebody says, oh, well, I'm the reliability engineer, so once they're done with the design, I'll go through and select all the components so they're derated properly on an electronics board. Or I'll, you know, do the simulation studies to see where the weak points are and then feedback to the design team. And those are both functions that are really design functions. It's selecting the components and derating is a consideration in it. But if the team doesn't know that and they expect, you know, Ralph over there in the corner to do all this for them, then when Ralph retires or moves on to another job or gets burned out, they have no reliability program. And I think that is also a principal part of what we do, is that enablement part is to allow the team to inherently, built into their systems all across the organization, create a reliable product. And we're there just to keep the momentum going, you know, to it polish it and keep it moving smoothly, and to do training and enablement and provide expertise, but it's not to design and create a reliable system. It is, we can help that process, but we can't do it. Might have been a long-winded answer for you there, Carl.
Well, that's a good length and breadth. This is almost comes down to career path for someone. And as you pointed out, your first comment was use the word preference.
Mm-hmm.
If someone is more comfortable doing things on their own, there is a role. There is a role for players that do things on their own.
That's
in
true.
Reliability, in terms of analysis, that type of thing. Personally, I think it limits the upward mobility. It limits the career path expansion, it is limiting.
But also limits the effectiveness of what they do. You know, if they're
yes,
only
that's
doing
the
chart and handing it off and not and don't have the relationships to convey its real meaning and interpretation, it's great analysis, but nobody knows about it.
100%. So there's the next dimension there is the effectiveness, or what we call influencing.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you do something really well yourself, that has value, but it doesn't influence others. And the design process and the manufacturing process is done by teams of people. And you have to be able to influence the individuals and the teams And that is another dimension to separate from doing something yourself.
Yep.
And so I think there's a, you cannot achieve reliability only with people that work by themselves. And it just can't be done. I've never seen it happen. So I think there's a decision to be made by any reliability engineer as to how broad, how effective they want to be. Do you want to show up to work and perform an analysis and do a good job and go home? Or do you want to also influence the outcome? And you talked about enabling systems to be in place so that that process not only works well on the project you're on, but also then has traction and sustainability even when you go. Yep. And so there's different dimensions to this, and it's a really wonderful question that somebody posed to you. Also, it affects something like introvert and extrovert. An introvert I'm very positive on introverts. They really contribute a lot. I tend to be more an introvert on myself in certain things. But if you don't work on teams, work with other people, that does limit the effectiveness of what you can do.
Yeah, and another whole angle of this thing, and then we should probably summarize it here pretty soon, but what's the existing state of the organization? If they're already pretty mature, the enablement part might be just polishing, might be just, you know, the occasional encouragement, and yeah, that's on track, or, you know, bringing up to speed new people and stuff like that. Where if they're very much in the reactive mode and just really not very mature about the reliability program, then I would do more of the enablement and coaching and teaching type stuff to get the team ahead of the imminent disasters that have been regularly occurring. So I think we got one of these seven dimension problems here, Carl. We might need an AI system to sort it out for us.
Well, it is multidimensional, absolutely. And now just bridging to the other topic, and we'll see how much we can get done in the podcast time, but I'm just intensely interested in this because, you know, my wife and I have grandchildren. We have lots of people that we want to be successful in this new world that is emerging.
Mm-hmm.
And the question comes down to, and this is really broad for a podcast on reliability engineering, but what does it mean to be human? And in a world that is rapidly becoming computerized, where AI systems, general AI, large language models, and everything is influencing so many businesses, then the question becomes, what is the role of human? And in our world, the question becomes, what is the role of human in reliability engineering, or in the field that where I, especially in the world of FMEA. And I'm pondering that subject, and I don't have a clear-cut answer, but I have some thoughts.
Yeah, my primary thought as you're describing that, Carl, is that it's the handshake or the pat on the back or the smile of, yes, we're in this together and we're going to make it work. It's that I can have AI do all kinds of great stuff, and they're getting better at, when you say thank you, they say, oh, you're very welcome, or, you know, have a nice day, or, you know, they do the cordiality type stuff. But it's not the same as eye-to-eye contact with a teammate that you just accomplished something. And I look at it that way, as that fits into that encouragement and enablement, the, you know, build on success type approach, and influence capability, that I can work with AI all day long with our team. And I don't think AI is going to be part of the team. It's going to be an it by some people, always.
Yeah, I think there's a limitation that I don't know if that limitation can be lifted. In other words, there are human qualities of empathy, passion, emotion.
Yeah, yeah. That's a better, connection. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, those characteristics are essential to influence people. They're also essential to convey knowledge. You're talking about eye contact. Absolutely. That's a connection. You're connecting with the audience. I've written about this in the teaching series that I've written mm-hmm. about, where connection is a very important element.
But it's also listening and understanding and listening and responding in real time with that empathy part all the way through it.
Yeah. So then the other part, so that's a human quality that I think is essential to influence and to convey knowledge and to participate with people. There's another part of it, which is the creativity side. Mm-hmm. And I've thought a lot about this because you can have a computer do a bunch of, and I don't mean to relegate AI only as a computer because AI has a lot of potential, but there's a limitation on creativity because an AI bot can do what ifs and thought starters. Have you thought about this? And that's really useful because they'll dredge up and cast the net out and think of all the things that could happen. And they can throw those out and make sure you've not missed something. That's not the same as creativity. Creativity is saying what something we have never done before. And you bring synergy, often with a team, mm-hmm. To consider as part of a deep discussion. And you're coming up with things that haven't been thought of before. And those aren't going to be on the internet. They're not going to be in the computer database. That is a human quality. An aspect of creativity that I think is essential for breakthroughs and some of the things you need to do really well. And so there's the creativity aspect. And like I say, I'm just beginning to formulate this. I haven't thought it all the way through, but I want to get it as well thought out as I can to write this article. And another one is like, body language. Mm-hmm. I know you do this really well. And you go into a room like you're going to present and you're reading the audience.
Yep.
And it's a good way of reading. You're not reading it to manipulate. You're actually empathizing and seeing people, and you can see if they understand what you're saying. You can listen to what they want to say. Those are human qualities. And I'm sure there are other ones that I'm not thinking of right now.
Yeah, it's I'm looking forward to the article. You get it out. Yeah. I think it both topics, the balance of what we do and the our role in and among all the new advances and tools that are coming at us are becoming available and both, I think, go back to, well, what is it we're really here for? And being able to articulate that very clearly. It's kind of that vision mission statement for the reliability role. And I remember, getting into a new job and so what am I supposed to be doing here? Oh, you're doing this, this, and this. Okay. And it wasn't fill out this form once a week, punch the time clock once a week. It was, manage this or oversee this or troubleshoot that or support this. It was usually a term that was just do good things. And it was later in my career that I finally figured out, well, what is it we're actually trying to do here? As in the Army, we weren't taking Hill number 42. We weren't at war. But the primary mission of me as a commander was to enable my soldiers to exist in a time of war, to do what they need to do and follow orders and get things done and be effective and safe about it. And so that was the mission. We were there to deter war by being so good at what we do that nobody would try it. And that was back in the 80s. But it was, once you understand what the overarching objective is, then I think a lot of other things start to fall into place of what's our role in that. And I think your distinction of, well, what can be replaced or augmented for that and what's strictly the human side of it. I totally agree with the creativity piece. I saw an article a few months ago is that AI is giving you an algorithm, the large language model is an algorithm to say, what's the next word in this sentence? Given this context, what's the next letter? What's the next word? And it's a regression to the mean. And then as more and more stuff gets posted and published and created by AI, and it reinforces this regression to the mean even more so. And it's already evident. I mean, it's not always obvious. It's, but yet when you can see AI slop, it's obvious. This is just, this was AI generated and not edited.
That's right. That's right. And looking into the future, I think it's really important for people to know what are the fundamentals, what are the principles of being human, and what are the principles of having a really great AI system, mm-hmm. and what is the role and responsibility? Because it's going to change. AI is going to get better and better, but there's a limitation, I think, because they cannot cross over into the passion and the empathy and the connection and the creativity realms. But I would say this to round this off, and I just absolutely love to hear from listeners. But in summarizing something here, soft skills. We've done many podcasts. We've written 2 chapters in our book on it. I think soft skills are going to become more and more important in the future, because yep. the hard skill of calculating and analysis that you can do courses in, that type of thing, is more likely to be modeled and computerized than the soft skills. And so I think you definitely need a solid foundation and hard skills, but I think it's more important than ever for the future to get a grounding in the soft skills and all the things that we've been podcasting about. So that's a kind of a final thought on this.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. We're just scratching the niche here. There's a question that came in, and then what you're bringing up, Carl, it's like, there's more to this. And I think we're both kind of struggling with this. But if you're listening to this and you've got some ideas or concepts, or you think, oh, we missed this idea of this, or this would be a way to look at it, we'd love to hear from you. It's an ongoing discussion, certainly is. And as I often say, join the discussion. So this would be one to chime in on. And all perspectives, if you're brand new to reliability or retired from a career in reliability engineering, I'd love to hear the different viewpoints and perspectives to see what you think. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. There's a couple of ways to get in touch with us. You can also find Carl and I and the other hosts of the show on LinkedIn and our About pages. So plenty of ways to get your ideas, thoughts, and comments into the discussion. And we'd love to, really would like to hear some more from you on this one. So with that, Carl, I think I don't know how much AI I got going today on my computer and Zoom and everything else, but I'll just push a button to say we're done.
We'll see what happens when you push the button.
Yeah, we'll talk to you later, Carl.
Okay, thank you, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.